prisons to the ground.
It's an extremely imposing and austere building with a lot of barbed wire fencing all around and lots of cameras.
He stepped out and took the sunlight, and the cops all stood around.
I'm standing on the roof of Dawson County Jail, which is right here in downtown Dallas. You can see all the skyscrapers of the city in front of us. And the extraordinary thing is this prison is empty. It has no prisoners in it. Last year they cleared it out and are closing it down and selling it off because they don't need it anymore. This is the most obvious manifestation of Texas's success in cutting crime and cutting the prison population.
And we'll raise the prisons to the ground.
I'm Danny Kruger, and I've come to Dallas to try and understand something pretty unexpected, that the state of Texas is enacting nothing less than a revolution in penal policy. This is a place that locks a lot of people up. Texas has half the population of the UK, but they've got twice the number of prisoners. But that's starting to change. Crime is falling faster here than elsewhere. Reoffending is falling. The prison population is falling. And the most unexpected thing is that it's not liberals who are emptying Texan jails. It's conservatives. What's called the Right on Crime movement has caught the imagination of Republican politicians across America, with half a dozen red states, red's the right-wing colour over here, now actively seeking to reduce prison numbers through rehabilitation. This is rehab, Republican style. Now, I have a background in conservative politics in the UK, but these days I run a charity in London called Only Connect, which I set up with my wife Emma. We work with prisoners, ex-offenders and young people who are at risk of offending to try and help them build a better life for themselves. So I am fascinated to see how Texan conservatives seem to be achieving a fall in crime and whether there may be lessons for us in Britain.
Should we do court today, or are you and I just going to have a conversation?
I miss you.
Because, you know, I'm married. We can't date.
Judge Robert Francis isn't like any judge I've ever seen in a British court. For a start, he never sits down. He paces around in his checked shirt and his cowboy boots. He's got 40 men and women sitting in rows in front of him, and he's just shooting the breeze. His language isn't very legal either. At one point, one of his defendants has to ask him not to cuss in court. But this is a drugs court, and it's different. It's something Texas has invested in heavily, and it's a big part of the Right on Crime agenda. Everybody here has been to prison and completed a rehab course, and now they're here in Judge Francis's court every week to take a drugs test and to tell the judge and everybody else what they've been up to.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Another day, another Dallas.
Yeah, two jobs.
Oh, yes.
Stand up and take a bow. I'm proud of you.
If they walk in and they see the stereotypical judge on the bench with a robe, I'm just the guy that, in their mind, sent him to prison. So from the minute they get here, they've got to believe something's different. They've got to believe that I and my staff want them to succeed.
They care. And that will take you a lot further with an individual in life because, man, we need hope. We are broken. And the staff is how we make it through.
I don't want to sound touchy-feely. I'm a 6'3", semi-cowboy. Most of my offices and house are decorated with the heads of animals I have harvested. I'm a life member of the National Rifle Association, the Texas State Rifle Association. I'm probably your poster child for conservatism. But the reality is you love them because they're humans. There's two things that factor into people as far as them getting to my court. One, I do believe the medical model. I think some people are just predisposed physiologically to be addicts. But the other part is how they were raised, how they were brought up, the environment in which they were surrounded. I had 18 years to raise each of my daughters before they went to school. And I raised them the way my parents raised me. You are encouraging. You are positive. You are reminding them every day of all their positive traits, things they do well, when they make good grades in school, when they win a race. You are thrilled for them, and you let them know that you love them and you're proud of them. On the other hand, when they do things that are wrong, you discipline them, and you let them know that that's not acceptable. People I deal with are familiar with part two, but they're not familiar with part one. They didn't have that growing up.
So what's this? Mr. Smith got a star. Where's your star, Mr. Smith?
He's been doing a lot of things. He's going to his marriage counseling, which we love that fact, working on his family. He's going to anger management. So we're real proud of him. So, Mr. Smith, you can put your star up on the board.
How you doing? Things got to be good. You've been smiling all four. No?
You sent me to jail. I ain't like that at all. I went to jail because I didn't attend my meetings, and I got kicked out the transitional house. That's it.
Now, all the studies tell us that jail sanctions are best when they're immediate and they're of a reasonable length of time, 3 or 4 days usually. I'm dealing with people that many of them spent years in prison, so doing time is not difficult for them. What makes it miserable is if they spent a few weeks out and they're comfortable with their life or they're trying to start a job and then they've made the choice to do something wrong which gets them sent to jail. I don't make the choice to send them to jail. They make the choice.
This program has God's hand all in it. You have to be here every day to see it. That man in there, I swear him and God must have some direct contact. Mm-hmm. I'm not lying to you. Like, it's teary-eyed because... Mm-hmm. You can't ask for a better man to sit up there and give a dang about us.
Do you see it as a spiritual program?
Sure. When I first started, we have graduation. And at graduation, you make the graduates speak. This woman was a 35-year-old black female. And she got up and spoke. She said, I've got these three children. CPS, Child Protective Services, has always taken them away from me. Because I'm a dope whore. I've either been high or I've been selling dope. I've been prostitute. I don't do any of those things anymore. And because I have a job and I have a place to live, my three children live with me. From my perspective, there's nothing more important in the world than your children. And I got to thinking, hell, this is a home run. I just hit a home run. I don't want to do regular court anymore. This is what I want to do. Was it spiritual? Yeah, it was the Lutheran church. Manifesting itself in me from all those years of Lutheran parochial school. This is a chance to do something good.
Great job. So proud of you.
So what struck me there is pretty obvious. You have a group of people who want to change, who support each other, who are bounded by clear, tough rules and sanctions, and who are held to account by a strong, loving leader. None of that you get in your average British court. No need for people to show a personal desire to change, no mutual support from your peers, no clarity or toughness on what happens if you break the rules, and certainly no love from the judge, let alone a long-term accountable relationship. After court, the prisoners gather for small group work, therapy sessions, employability workshops, time with their key workers. And the judge took me to lunch in a Mexican restaurant. Over enchiladas and Coke, he told me what it was like in the old days before Right on Crime.
When I was a young prosecutor, I started at the DA's office in 1985. And the reality was, if you found somebody guilty, and it was a second or first degree felony, they went to prison. It was just, you didn't offer probation, they went to prison. If it was a third degree felony, and they didn't have any priors, they got offered probation. And as soon as they screwed up probation, they got revoked and went to prison. We used to joke that probation was called Trail'em, Nail'em, and Jail'em.
How did it happen that they stopped that Trail'em, Nail'em, Jail'em approach?
Our crime rate began to skyrocket. And we went from a prison population capacity of 75 to 80,000 to 150,000. When you double the size of your prison, at now, what do they say, about $53 a day per... See, even that young child over there is upset. Nobody's happy with that, so you got to do something different. Actually, in 2011, I think I have the statistics, the spending on criminal justice went down 11 or 12%, and incarceration went down appropriately, but the actual crime level dropped 2%. What's unheard of in modern history that you spend less money and incarcerate less people and crime drops?
One morning in January of 2005, the Speaker of the House calls me into his office and says, Jerry, I'm going to make you chairman of the Corrections Committee.
Jerry Madden, the godfather of Right on Crime, was a congressman in the Texas legislature. He says he never gave a thought to the plight of criminals or the idea of rehabilitation before this conversation with his party leader.
And I looked at him and I said, well, what you always would do to the Prime Minister, or in your case, or in our case, the Speaker, we'd say, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really appreciate the opportunity. What a great challenge this is. And to myself, I'm saying, oh, God, why me? What did I do to deserve this? What, what's he punishing me for? But then I asked him what was the second most important question I've ever asked in my life. Because I asked him, well, Mr. Speaker, what do you want me to do? And he gave me the 8 words that changed my life. He said, don't build new prisons. They cost too much. So where do you start?
Jerry is a folksy old charmer, but he was an engineer by background, and he set about figuring out how to do this like a NASA mission. First, he built a team of experts who analysed the data to make forecasts of the future prison population, and they found they had an extra 17,000 prisoners, a 12% increase, coming down the pipe. So he studied what worked and what didn't when it comes to rehab and reoffending. Then he did what doesn't happen much in American politics. He reached across the aisle to the Democrats and got their support too. Finally, he convinced his own colleagues that the evidence was clear. They had to cut prison numbers through rehabilitation.
So we went ahead. We put in a lot of substance abuse treatment beds. We put in intermediate sanction beds. We put in the alcoholic program. We put an additional $10 million toward mental health and putting them back into the communities. We expanded the specialty courts and gave funding levels to the specialty courts. We helped our probation departments. We helped our parole divisions. We put all that in there and spent $241 million, I think was the number it added up.
This compared to the $500 million they were going to have to spend building new prisons for the extra 17,000 prisoners that were coming. They didn't build those prisons, and now they've actually started closing down prisons and selling them off, like the one I saw in Dallas. The success in Texas was so extraordinary that Republicans across America have rushed to endorse the ideas. Presidential nominee Newt Gingrich, David Keene, former head of the National Rifle Association and the American Conservative Union, Pat Nolan of Prison Fellowship, and Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform, all speaking here at the Right on Crime Washington Summit this May.
If those of us who are conservatives who believe in freedom, and those of us who believe that every American is endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, then frankly, that also applies to prisoners. Once you decide everybody in prison is also an American, then you've got to really reach in your own heart and ask, is this the best we can do?
The criminal justice system is not set up simply to give retribution. And to the extent that you're locking people up for long periods of time, not doing anything to help them reenter society, you're not solving the problem.
When you have 40% of the inmates return to prison within 3 years for a new crime, that's a problem. That's a failure rate of 40%. If you went to a hospital that when you left, 40% of the time you were still sick, you'd find a new hospital.
And when you come from Texas and when you come from the conservative perspective and you talk to state legislators in other states and you say, I'm from Texas or I'm a national conservative and I want to suggest this approach, they listen because they know you're not trying to sell them some everybody get out of jail free card. And we've gotten real progress made. Only conservatives can reform the judicial system. Liberals have no credibility in this country on that subject because for 50 years they screwed things up.
About 4 years ago, I was invited to a working dinner to discuss criminal justice reform, and the person inviting me was Newt Gingrich. I was intrigued by this invitation. I'm typically not the sort of person who would have guessed he'd be invited to dinner by Newt Gingrich.
Mark Maurer, executive director of the Sentencing Project and author of Race to Incarcerate, is a leading liberal expert on criminal justice.
With Right on Crime coming on the scene, what that does, I think, in the political world is to give a greater level of comfort to more centrist Democrats and Republicans alike. One doesn't need to feel that one will be labeled as out of the mainstream by talking about real policies that might have a better effect on crime.
This support from a prominent liberal reformer made me wonder, have conservatives simply stolen the liberals' clothes? I asked Mark Levin, policy director at Right on Crime, the home of the national movement.
No, we don't think so. I think a lot of what we're advocating as far as alternatives to prison are very focused on holding people accountable. You know, a lot of offenders will say it's more difficult to go into a drug court than it is to, you know, go to jail for several months. You know, the phrase is three hots and a cot. And also the fact that, of course, if you're in jail, you're not paying restitution to the victim, you're not taking care of your children, you're not paying child support, and so forth. So being behind bars is kind of an escape from the ordinary responsibilities that the average citizen has.
What do you think are the reasons for the incredible increase in imprisonment in the U.S.?
In the 90s, you saw even a lot of liberal governors. They presided over building hundreds of thousands of prison beds. These elected officials, they felt particularly vulnerable to the soft on crime, so they tried to overcompensate. And of course, Clinton and Joe Biden did this crime bill that gave states billions of dollars to build more prisons. And in exchange, states had to adopt truth in sentencing. It was said for only violent offenders, but a lot of states just made it for nonviolent as well. And what that means is those sent to prison have to serve 85 or 90% of their prison term, which essentially abolishes parole. So that put prison populations in many states on autopilot. It was kind of a sense of politicians just throwing whatever they could against the wall and see what sticks.
My name is Bill Dupree. Everyone knows me as Wild Bill. I've been that way all my life, born and bred in Texas. And if you're a person from Dallas and from Texas and you got that name, you probably had to earn it somewhere along the road.
Wild Bill's Western store in the old cowboy heart of Dallas. A huge set of steer's antlers on the counter have been turned into a steamer for shaping Stetson hats. Cowboy boots and Lone Stars everywhere. And here's Bill himself with a twinkle in his eye and a handshake like a vice. I wanted to find out what the non-politicians think about closing down prisons and investing in rehab. I asked Bill to tell me about the Texan attitude to crime and punishment.
Well, I think you have to fit the punishment with the crime, and that's what it's all about. We're gentle spirits, but the thing is, you don't want to step on us, and you don't want to...
Don't mess with Texas.
That's right. You don't want to mess with us because we're very gentle people, but you can't let people continuously to walk on you or to take advantage of you. You have to be strong and say in a very gentle way, you know, look, let's do what's right here.
What's your reaction when you hear that prisons are emptying in Texas?
Well, I hope all the prisons get empty. You know, I don't want anyone to have to go to prison. But, you know, if someone needs to be in prison, then the facility is there for them. But I'm glad to see that we can take the approach to saying, let's do something proactive and let's do something that can benefit someone instead of, you know, just locking him in prison and letting him do nothing for, you know, 5 or 10 years. You know, let's rehabilitate. Let's have counsel in there. Let's see if we can change that.
Bill makes everything sound really simple, and I can't disagree with anything he's saying. But isn't there a bigger question here? Not just how you help someone stop reoffending when they come out of prison, but how many people you send there in the first place? America has 5% of the world's population, but 25% of its prisoners. Why is that?
Well, mass incarceration has been a unique phenomenon in the U.S., and it's not one that cuts across the board equally by any means. Research from the Justice Department shows us that if current trends continue, one of every three black boys born today can expect to do time in prison in his lifetime, one of every six Hispanic boys, and one of every 17 white boys. What we've done in mass incarceration is to take a set of social problems. We have concentrated poverty, we have loss of economic opportunity, we have deindustrialization, all of which has really transformed many urban communities of color over the last four decades. And rather than respond to those problems with approaches that would create good jobs, that would provide a broader social safety net and the like, instead we've come to use the criminal justice system as our primary means of responding to the problems that have been created. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We're sick of working for crumbs and filling up the
prisons, dying over money and relying on religion for help. So I threw the big accusation at Mark Levin. You might be helping a few individuals sort their lives out after prison, but all you're really doing is rescuing people from the burning building. The burning building is America's social and racial divide. Does the Right on Crime movement have anything to say about poverty and race and the socioeconomic causes of crime?
Well, I think what we realize is that there's always going to be racism, there's always going to be poverty, and we can't wait until those issues are fully addressed, whenever that may be. And so the other aspect is, if you look at it, most of the increase in incarceration is due to policy choices in terms of sentencing laws, for example, mandatory minimums and so forth. And so actually, if different policy choices were made, even though we would still have poverty and we would still have some crime, that the incarceration rates would be a lot lower.
We get accused of going after the low-hanging fruit. Well, if you go after the low-hanging fruit and you make a huge changes like Texas in, and you save the state a lot of money and you don't send more people to prison and all those things, isn't it worth going after a lot of low-hanging fruit? There's a lot of out there. Why do you kill yourself trying to climb to the top of the tree and fail when you can get tons of apples off that low-hanging branches? Go get those low-hanging apples because you've saved a lot of lives by changing what we're doing with them.
There might be a growing consensus about the importance of rehabilitation, but there remain big differences between liberals and conservatives about the causes of crime.
I think for many conservatives, crime is a problem of individual failings. I fully agree with that. At the same time, the choices that each of us has, the opportunities that we each have in life, are dramatically different in American society.
So our first graduate... Christopher Barrientes.
This is a graduation dinner on the 48th floor of the Thanksgiving Tower in Dallas. Here are proud parents and partners and glowing speeches from the teachers. But it's no ordinary graduation. This is the Prison Entrepreneurship Program, and all the students here are ex-prisoners who have been mentored by business executives before and after their release from prison. PEP is a privately funded project, but the state allows and encourages it to work in prisons, with some pretty serious offenders that many conservatives believe should be rotting in jail forever.
Brian Kelly.
The brotherhood, the accountability, the networking possibilities that I have, you just can't get anywhere. Not even out of a business school, and certainly not out of prison. So, you know, I did almost 22 years in prison. Nowhere else can I get out and have the ready-made accountability group and family that I've got right now.
Everybody got a hold of somebody? Bow our heads. Father, we come before you. One hope, one family, in unity. And thank you for...
God is very present in Texas, and his presence in the criminal justice system would be of concern to many liberals. But here, many conversations do end up with him. Before the graduation, I asked the head of PEP, Bert Smith, what values underlie the organization?
They are all, I believe, Judeo-Christian values. And in many of the classes we have, particularly in the character phase, they will be those values will be taught with biblical illustrations. We're not affiliated with any church. We don't have a requirement that anybody that comes into the program, either as a participant or as a volunteer, be a Christian. We have people of all faiths and of no faith involved. But I'll also tell you that, you know, all of our staff and most of our volunteers are Christians.
Thank you, Father, in the name of Jesus.
Amen. After the graduation, I had a chat with a man called Pat.
Prior to going to prison, I managed a drug ring that moved drugs between Houston and Fort Worth in Louisiana. That wasn't why I went to prison, though. I ended up going to prison for murder.
So you went to prison for that offense. What was it like when you went to jail? What were you feeling and thinking, and how long was it before you decided to change?
Well, my first 3 years of incarceration, you know, it was fueled by anger. You know, I was so angry until I'd gotten into an altercation with a correctional officer, and I tried to throw one of them off the second tier of the prison dorm. And it was at that time, while I was in administrative segregation, facing possibly another 40-year sentence, that I started to realize, you know, even though other people weren't there with me, they were still doing time with me. You know, at the time when I went to prison, I had a 6-month-old son. And I had my grandmother. My grandmother was always my heart and soul, you know, because I was born to a teen mother. And she basically threw me in my grandmother's driveway when I was 5 days old. You know, my mother had been raped by my father. I was always reminded of that growing up, you know, that I was a bastard child, you know, and I was conceived through a crime, basically. It wasn't until I was in prison that I really addressed it, and I realized that what drove my anger and my rage was because I felt I didn't belong.
Just explain a little bit about the work you do now.
As an initiative manager in prison, that's my title. But what I feel that I do every day is go in and empower guys.
Before leaving, Pat agreed to share his sweet name with me.
This is a part of de-gangsterization in PEP. All the men will receive sweet names. For myself, because I was there so long, I've had so many sweet names. So let me tell you how I formally introduce myself. Hi, my name is Patrick McGee, a.k.a. Patty Cakes, a.k.a. Pat Me Down, a.k.a. Precious. Oh, and that's called owning it.
Stratford will arrive in 1 minute. Next station, Waterloo.
Back in London, I'm reflecting on just how different Texas is. The people are a lot nicer. The moral atmosphere seems a lot clearer and a lot more Christian. And they seem to get rehab right, too. People change when they want to change and when other people get around them with love and support and focus. How much of that can we imagine in Britain? I went to see my old friend from my Tory days, the MP David Davis, a former Shadow Home Secretary and now a leader of the conservative right wing. I asked him what he thought of the work I'd seen in Texas.
I broadly approve of it. It seems to me to be, how can I put it, no-nonsense rehabilitation, which is actually what you need. One of the difficulties with approaches to rehabilitation in the UK and elsewhere has they have been a bit prone to wishful thinking, and I think this is completely devoid of wishful thinking.
What seemed to work in Texas is when a bunch of Republican politicians stood up and said, this is costing us too much money. Do you think there's an appetite on the right in British politics, in the Conservative Party, for a reduction in prison building purely on fiscal grounds?
Purely on fiscal grounds? No. On fiscal and effectiveness grounds, yes. But it seems to me that the environment is ripe for arguments on this just because everything else has failed. And we don't really understand why the crime reduction is going on, but it's certainly not because of our penal policy.
Do you imagine a Tory Home Secretary standing up at a party conference and saying, rehab works?
Absolutely. I can see a Conservative Home Secretary standing up and saying, we're going to give you less crime, we're going to give you safer streets, we're going to give it all to you for less money because we found a way of making rehab work.
Leaving Westminster and heading back to my charity, I wonder if we haven't found, in Texas of all unlikely places, the beginnings of something new in politics, something radical and effective that everyone can get behind. Left-wingers like Right on Crime because it understands why some people commit crime and it seeks to help them. Right-wingers like it because it combines personal responsibility with a strong moral worldview. Everyone else can like it because it seems to work, it cuts crime and it saves money. And it makes sense beyond politics. What I found in Texas is that what works is a community, whether it's a Christian project or a drugs court, people supporting people, offenders and volunteers and professionals, building relationships of trust and love and personal accountability. Could we see that happening in Britain?